we continue with getting practical techniques, ways to change your behavior in your People Smart presentation so that you're loving and leading others in a more effective way. So let's continue on with some of these techniques, and these techniques come from Lyle Lowndes in his book, How to Talk to Anyone. The next one is finding out what someone does without asking, what do you do? So how do you find out what someone does for a living? You simply practice the following 8 words. All together now, how do you spend most of your time? That's it. You know, when I put this class together, this was one of the principles. I thought, hey, I should try this and do this as an experiment, this one technique. And so at the church we attended and at various meetings, I asked somebody, people that I never met before or new people, hey, how do you spend most of your time? Do you know what I found? It was better. It was better than, what do you do? Because how someone answered that question related to much more in terms of how to connect with someone than what do you do. So anyway, there's a great one for you to put into your repertoire. With me now, how do you spend most of your time? Answering the what do you do question. To make most of every encounter, personalize your verbal resume with just as much care as you would a written curriculum vitae. Instead of having one answer to the omnipresent, what do you do, prepare a dozen or so variations, depending on who's asking. For optimum networking, every time someone asks you about your job, give a calculated oral response resume in a nutshell. Before you submit your answer, consider what possible interest the asker could have in you. For instance, when somebody asks me, what do I do? What I can talk about is something that's interesting, something that, you know, in a sense, primes the pump for more discussion. So what things that I've been answering recently, so Henry, what do you do? Well, I help bring high-quality ministry training worldwide for free. Now, if you answer it that way, they're going to go, you do? What is that? See, you open up the discussion for more and more engagement. Include benefits statements in what you do. Putting the benefits statement in your verbal nutshell resume brings your job to life and makes it memorable. Even if your new acquaintance can't use your service, the next time he or she meets someone moving to the area, wanting a plan to their financial future, thinking of self-defense, considering cosmetic surgery or needing a new hairstyle, Lyle likes to put all these like interesting titles here, when they come to mind, not the unimaginative people who gave the tax return description of their jobs, but the big winners who painted a picture of helping people who with needs. So, you know, for me, when I said helping, bringing high quality ministry training worldwide for free, see, there's the feature, the benefit, for free. So what you when you talk to someone, let's say you're a student at CLI and someone says, so where are you studying? I'm studying at a school that gives free, high quality ministry training. See, it brings a certain feature to your answer. And that's how it is in ministry. When you're a pastor or a leader and someone, you know, I remember networking at the Chamber of Commerce meetings and at meeting people so I could share the church or share Christ. And people would say, you know, so you're here. What do you do? And I would say to them, well, basically, you know, I bring people closer to God, or I'm a pastor who actually once was the president of the Chamber of Commerce. Really? See, so because I'm at the chamber meeting, pastor brings people to God. I'm a I was the president of the Chamber of Commerce as a local pastor. Now notice you're looking for the tie-ins and you're creating that benefit statements in your responses to people. Here's the next principle. Not so fast, me too. So no fast, me too. No so fast, me too. Interesting way to put it. Whenever you have something in common with someone, the longer you wait to reveal it, the more moved and impressed he or she will be. You emerge as a confident, this is what Lyle says, big cat. Not a lonely, stray, hungry for quick connections with a stranger cat. Okay, so think about this. You meet someone and you find something in common. Keep them talking. Don't say me too. Keep them talking about who they are. Have that positive regard and that those sticky eyes, those smiles. You're listening. And at some point, bring up that me too. Now, according to Lyle, this helps someone to really get established in wanting to talk to you. And you really get established in what they're doing. And I'll add one thing that I've learned over the years on this point, because I would say this point as well, is this. Let your questions that you ask the person telling you something, let your questions reflect the me too. Because if you really had that me too, you actually can ask better questions. So I'll give you an example. So let's say somebody is talking about golf. You know, I like to golf. And they all of a sudden, you know, it comes up, you like to golf. So they're talking about, have you played any golf courses that you like? So somebody says, yeah, you know, I really enjoyed Pilgrim's Run golf course. So now you could say, me too, I enjoyed it. Or you could mention something I understand that last hole is really difficult. Then that person, yeah, you have to go over this big water, and once you're over this water, the green is covered by a sand trap. And so instead of saying, me too, I was there, let them relive their whole experience. So how was that second shot? How did that go? Now, you're informed because you played that golf course before, but you're holding off the me too in your questions sort of keep the conversation going. At some point, that person may so enjoy telling you about playing that last hole, and at some point they even said, oh, so have you ever played it? At that point, you say, yeah, I played it too, and I hit mine in the bunker. Mine went in the sand trap, and then there's a funny, everybody's laughing. Notice, the no so fast, or not so fast, me too. Here's the next principle. Communication, okay? Communication. Notice how that's spelled. Start every appropriate sentence with you. So as you are playing that last hole, you hit it on the green, or, you know, in other words, frequently use the you. When you're preaching sermons, that's another place too, is don't do third person messages. It's about you. You know, today, you and I are going to look at the Word of God. See, it's that sort of feeling. It immediately grabs your listener's attention. It gets more of a positive response and saves them the having to translate into me terms. When you sprinkle you as literally as salt and pepper through your conversation, your listeners find it an irresistible spice. Now, when you do the you in your conversation, here's my one caution. It's not you as a form of disrespect. It's you as a form of respect. So you have to be a little careful about you, that it's not like pointing the finger you when you're communicating with them. Next, use visual images in communication. Find phrases that have visual impact. Instead of cliches like sure as death and taxes, try as certain as Beach traffic in July. Now, I live in a beach town here in Grand Haven. And I'll tell you, that's a metaphor that people would understand. Yeah, it's as certain as beach traffic at Coast Guard is what we would say here in Grand Haven, because we have a Coast Guard festival. Lots of people come to the beach. As sure as your shadow will follow you, your listeners can't see death or taxes, but they sure can see beach traffic in July or their shadow following them down the street. So when you communicate, think of colorful ways to share ideas, not just cliches that basically are just sort of dull. Here's the next principle. Stop teasing, period. The next sure sign of a little cathood is teasing. Let cats go around patting their friends, punches, and saying, enjoy that cheesecake, eh? Or looking at the balding heads and saying, hey, hair today, gone tomorrow, eh? They think it's hilarious to make a quip at someone else's expense and say, you don't have an inferiority complex. You are inferior, hearty, har-har. See, teasing and people smart do not go together. If you are a teaser, stop it. You say, oh, come on, just a little teasing is just in good fun. Don't even mess, in my opinion, with that line. Do not tease. If you're going to call attention to someone in a humorous way, it better be that the humor itself is a huge compliment. Do not tease someone about how they look, how they talk, how they act. Do not use humor. Don't use this hidden agenda humor, period. Don't even go there. People, smart people, do not tease, period. Here's the next principle, delivering bad news. Everyone, as a pastor, especially a spiritual leader, everyone must give bad news from time to time. And winning professionals and pastors, leaders, chaplains, do it with the proper attitude. A doctor advising the patient she needs the operation does it with compassion. A boss informing an employee he did not get the job takes a sympathetic demeanor. Grief counselors at airports or fatal crashes share grief-stricken sentiment of relatives. Big winners, as Lyle writes, know when delivering any bad news, they should share the sentiment of the receiver. So, as a pastor, you might be in front of people mentioning that one of the parishioners has passed away. And just pray about that the attitude by which you share that news is the attitude appropriate for your audience, whether it's one person or whether it's 10 people or whether it's a whole group of people. So you sort of, in it's okay to practice that proper emotional sentiment. Talking to VIPs. VIPs means very important people. And we all know there are people that have that designation, and they get extra respect because of maybe how our society considers them. People who are VIPs in their own right don't slobber over celebrity. When you are chatting with one, don't complain, don't compliment her work, saying how much pleasure or insight it's giving you. If you do single out any of the star's accomplishments, make sure it's a recent one, not a memory that's getting yellow in her scrapbook. If the queen bee has a drone sitting with her, in other words, if the celebrity or the very important person has one of their assistants with that celebrity, find a way to involve that assistant in the conversation. Something's really annoying. If you're around a very important person, and you lock on that person, and all you're doing is talking to that person and ignoring the assistant or ignoring the person with it, that's very rude. What you want to do in general is treat very important people as children of God. that you are thrilled to talk to, but you're just as thrilled to talk to that person's assistant as well as that homeless person on the street. In other words, everybody in your mind matters to God. And when you talk to a very important person, you give them the respect due. When you're talking to someone that's not important, you give them the respect due as a creature of God. But be very careful not to like be this touristy type person that makes the VIP person, you know, feel uncomfortable with how you have just, you know, you're worshiping this person. Just, you know, stay away from that. And the VIP doesn't want that anyway. And if that VIP does want that, probably a pastor or a leader like you and me is not going to make a big impression on that person anyway. Here's the next very important principle, how to say thank you. Very simply, never let the phrase thank you stand naked and alone. Always make it thank you for something. People use the bare exposed thank you so often that people don't even hear it anymore. When we buy the morning newspaper, we see a naked thank you. We say a naked thank you at the vendor. When he gives us our nickel change, it's the same thank you. You want to give a valued customer or a parishioner or someone in your family or a friend who makes a big purchase at your store or connects to you or whatever, or a loved one who cooks you a delicious dinner. So you do, when you say thank you, you want to say thank you for what? Hey, thank you so much for this delicious dinner. Thank you so much for helping set up the chairs at church. So you have a thank you that's very directed as to what you are thanking someone for. Here's the next principle. Keep getting interesting. Once a month, scramble your life. Do something you've never dreamed of doing. Participate in a sport. Go to an exhibition. Hear a lecture on something totally out of your experience. You get 80% of the right lingo and insider questions from just one exposure. Now, why is this so important? When you are going to meet so many different people. You know, I've had the opportunity to go to various seminars, and one thing I will do is I will pick a seminar that I know absolutely nothing about this topic. I went years ago with my daughter who went to a writing seminar. And I looked over the list, and I looked at, wow, writing blogs. In those days, I didn't know anything about writing blogs. So I went to that seminar. In one seminar, 1 hour, I learned stuff I had never learned before about writing blogs. That now, years later, I've just researched a lot about that. But when I first got introduced, it allowed me to converse with people who write blogs. Even if I never wrote blogs later on, it would have helped me get more and more interesting. So keep getting interesting. Learning the lingo. Learn the lingo. All you need is a few insider opening questions to get started with any group. You ask questions, listen to responses, indulge in elementary, on-target conversation with them for a moment or two about their field. Then you can always change the subject ASAP. You don't want to fake you are more knowledgeable about the field than you really are. In other words, learn some lingo. You can converse with someone. But that doesn't mean you have to stay at that topic and pretend you're an expert. But get more and more interesting and keep learning more about what people do. Another very important people smart technique is to know what to do about the hot buttons. Before jumping blindly into a bevy of bookbinders or a drove of dentists, find out what the hot button issues are in their field. Every industry has burning concerns that the outside world knows little about. Ask your informant to bear the industry buzz, then to heat the conversation up, push those buttons. Now, what is all this? Well, it is true. No matter where you are, if you're a pastor, there are certain controversial issues right now that are out there. And there's even hot button issues. Now, be very careful about this. You do not want to sort of come off as gossiping, pushing hot buttons and everything. But there is a certain wisdom and knowledge to know the lingo, know the hot buttons of every field. And I would even put it this way. I would not push the buttons that create controversy and division. I would find the buttons where there's delicious debate about things happening right now, or great hot buttons of opportunity. So I would, let's say, push these type of buttons. I would say I'd push the button in online education right now. Here are some of the hot buttons. You know, how fast is the internet all over the world? Okay, so if somebody were talking to me and they didn't really know me, but they found out about internet education, one of the hot buttons is, you know, the expanding fast internet worldwide. So if somebody talked to me and they were to approach me and they said, I understand that fiber optic cables are being placed all over Ethiopia, a nation which only 10 years ago did not have much access to the internet. Now, that would right away as a hot button issue. Oh, yeah, they'll have this fiber optics all through Ethiopia in a few years, I understand. And then the next thing you know, that person's made a friend to me because they pushed a hot button issue in my industry or in my life. And that's the same with being a pastor. There are areas, you know, stay away from a lot of that controversy. Many of that, the Apostle Paul says that those controversies really do nothing. So we want to find the hot buttons, but the blessing hot buttons. That's how I would change Kyle's technique here, or Lyle's technique here. Instead of the hot buttons, I would go like the loving hot buttons, the principled hot buttons, the opportunity buttons. Those type of hot buttons are always fun to talk about and very safe in terms of not offending anybody. Here's another one, principle. Clear customs. Before putting one toe on foreign soil, get a book on do's and the taboos, the don'ts, around the world. Before you shake hands, give a gift, make gestures, even compliment anyone's possessions, check it out. Your gaffe could gum up your entire gig. You know, I've traveled internationally, and that's what I will do. That I will get a book on the do's and don'ts of relationship connection around the world. I remember one time I was traveling in a country that was very former Soviet country, and I had read about the hospitality, and I remember being at someone's house and someone put before me something that did not look good to me just because of my American like diet in those days. Now, over the years, I've even adjusted that to try to eat anything anywhere. But one thing I did is I remember reading a book about how this would happen, and I ate this food and just really was a blessing. And that was a big difference in showing the love of Christ. So we need to clear customs. Here's one, copy and paste. Watch people. Look at the way they move. Small movements, big movements, fast, slow, jerky, fluid, old, young, classy. Pretend the person you are talking to is your dance instructor. Is he jazzy mover? Is she a balletic mover? Watch his or her body, then imitate the style of movement that makes your conversation partner sublimely real, comfy with you. Now, you may say, this sounds a little manipulative. It can be, but if you think of how to love someone, I'll give you a good example. If I visit my parents who are still living, my dad's 94 as I'm doing this taping and my mom is 89, and I visit them in the independent senior care home where they're staying, and if I go in there and, you know, start, hey, everybody, how's it going? And hey, how's it feeling? How you feeling today? And everything. Okay, so I come there, and that would be totally wrong. And we intuitively know that, you know, there's somebody in a walker, they're going a little slow. So you come into that and you look people gently and comfortably in the eyes, and you share with them, and if they're a little bit down, we don't, what you so down about today for, and all this positive stuff, we will be considered rude. So we want to match, we know that intuitively, but in general, to match sort of the emotion in the room or match the person is good and loving people smart. Pay attention to the language of the thing. Would you believe using the wrong synonym for a seeming uncomplicated word like have labels you as a know-nothing in somebody else's world? For example, cat lovers purr about having cats, but horse lovers say owning horses, and fish folk don't talk own fish, they talk about keeping fish. Hey, no big deal, but if you use the wrong word, your conversation partner will assume correctly that you are a stranger to his or her hobby land. You know, and those are just little things you can do. If you know that you're going to go to someone who is owning horses, make sure you don't say keep horses, or that you know, don't use these metaphors that are not in the horse world. You know, it's sort of like my last name is spelled R-E-Y-E-N-G-A, Ryanga. Now, years ago, when people would call, there was a lot of telemarketers, and I could always tell a telemarketer if they said, hi, is Henry Ryanga home? If they mispronounced my name, I didn't know them. And that feeling of familiarity with things that are core to your person, your name, if you're into horses or whatever you are into, whatever your hobby is, to know how that terminology is very loving to somebody and very people smart. In other words, look for metaphors that matter. Evoke your listener's interest or lifestyle and weave images around it. To give your points more power and punch, use analogies from your listener's world, not yours. Potent imaging also tells your listeners that you think like them and hence you share their interest. So what's happening here is and it takes work, and that's where the loving side comes in. That you basically are interested in them, and you're interested using their images, and you're learning about them. Employ empathizers. Do not be an unconscious ummer. Vocalize complete sentences to show your understanding. Dust your dialogue with phrases like, I see what you mean. Sprinkle it with sentimental sparklers like, that's a lovely thing to say. Your empathy impresses your listeners, encourages them to continue. So put a little emotion in your conversation. Automatically correct empathizers. What part of their anatomy are your associates talking through? Their eyes, their ears, their gut? For visual people, use visual empathizers that make them think you see the world the way they do. For auditory folks, use auditory empathizers to make them think you hear them loud and clear. For kinetic types, use kinetic empathizers to make them think that you feel the way they do. In other words, we not only are mirroring the emotion of those you're listening to, even the eyes, ears, the hearing, all of those issues, the better you get at people smart, intuitively you will actually begin doing this. Use the we words. The word we fosters togetherness. It makes the listener feel connected. It gives the subliminal feeling of you and me against the cold, cold world. When you prematurely say we or us, even to strangers, it subconsciously brings them closer. It subliminally hints that you are already friends. At a party, you might say to someone standing behind you at the buffet, hey, this looks great. They laid out a nice spread for us. Or, we are getting fat. We're going to get fat if we let ourselves enjoy this. The thing about we words is that we words really do bring us together because we are the children of God. Now, again, not in a manipulative way. Let's go back to the idea of old friends. When you meet a stranger, you'd like to make a less of a stranger. Search for some important moment you share during your first encounter. Then find a few words that reprieve the laugh, the warm smile, the good feelings the two of you felt. Just like old friends, you have a little history together, an instant history. When anyone you'd like to make part of your personal, professional future in pastoring, look for those special moments, then make a refrain. You know, in some ways, all relationships are like a song, and some of those fun moments are reframed. Let's say you're a pastor now, and somebody came to your church, and after the church, there was a little coffee, and while you're having coffee, that person shared something very special with you. So now that person comes back the week later, and somehow or other that special thing could be brought back up. You know, I know how much you care about that. That really moved me that you shared that when we met last week. You know, you can do some of that. Now be careful that you're not being patronizing in treating someone as an old friend. Compliment in the network. A compliment one hears is never as exciting as the one he overhears. A priceless way to praise is not by telephone, not by telegraph, but by a telefriend. Now, in general, you cannot hardly make this work in any manipulative way, but you can do this. When you see that someone is very special, just talk it up in a positive way. And many times, when you talk it up, they will talk it up, and somebody will feel really blessed, and it will come back. It's like the opposite of gossip. In gossip, you say negative things, and it comes back in a negative way. Giving someone a compliment to others and talking them up in a positive, honest fashion is not gossip. It's the opposite. It creates goodwill. Carrier of good news. Instead of becoming a carrier of good news and kudos, instead, become a carrier of good news and kudos. Whenever you hear something complimentary about someone, fly to them with the compliment. You fly. Your fans may not posthumously stuff you and put you on display in a museum like a Stumpy Joe, but everyone loves the carrier pigeon of kind thoughts. In general, make that your people smart habit. Here's some rules for giving compliments. Deliver your killer compliments to the recipient in private. If you are standing with a group of four or five people and you praise one woman for being fit, every other woman feels like a barrel of lard. If you tell one man he has a wonderful carriage, and the others feel like humpbacks. You also make the blushing recipient uncomfortable. That's rule number one for giving compliments. Do it privately, especially on compliments that could be thought to be in comparison. Rule two, make your killer compliments credible. For example, I'm tone deaf. If I'm forced to sing even a simple song like Happy Birthday, I would sound like a sick pig. Lyle writes, if anyone in earshot were foolish enough to tell me they liked my voice, I would know, as he calls it, hogwash. I would know there's no way. Number three, confer only one killer compliment per half year on each recipient. In other words, you come across as insincere, groveling, pandering, and thoroughly manipulative person, not cool. With careful aim, a killer compliment captures everyone. It works best, however, when you use it judiciously on new occasions. So in general, be one who generously gives encouragement, but when you're really wanting to say you have done something special, make sure that it's not every other day that you do this. Here's another concept here, the tombstone game. Ask the important person in your life what they would like to be engraved, what they would like engraved on their tombstone. Chisel that now in your memory and don't mention it again. Then when the moment is right to say, I appreciate you, I love you, Fill in the blanks with the very words they gave you 2 weeks earlier. Take the people's breath away when you feed their deepest self-image with this compliment. At last, they say to themselves, someone who loves me for who I truly am. Now, again, this can be very manipulative, but I look at it like this. Why wouldn't we want to listen to what people really want in life, what they really want on their tombstone? There's no game to this. Lyle, in a sense, makes this the game. I have done this intuitively, not even thinking it was manipulation of the game or anything. Someone shares something that they really feel important about. And I appreciate that. I appreciate that how God has led in their life. And at some point when I'm called to give that encouragement, that compliment, why not bring up the fact that this is what they really feel strongly about? You know, these principles are very important. And we need to intuitively learn how to put them into the love fabric of our relationships. And when we do, we will love people in ways that they never thought that somebody cared that much for them. So here's my challenge. There are a lot of techniques here. Maybe pick one or two or three and work on a few at a time. And maybe after you even take this class, go back 6 months later, log back in and just listen to this presentation again and ask yourself, how am I applying these various techniques for how I can lovingly be people smart?